This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush is in New York today to address the UN General Assembly. He's hoping for wider international assistance to rebuild post-war Iraq. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan opened the General Assembly meeting earlier today, saying what's done is done, and it's time now for the international community to move forward as a whole.
Whatever view each of us may take of the events of recent months, it is vital to all of us that the outcome is a stable, democratic Iraq.
Annan cited ongoing global terrorism, particularly what he called the, quote, brutal and deliberate assault on the UN headquarters in Baghdad a few weeks ago. That truck bombing attack left more than 20 people dead. Another suicide bombing this week, also at the headquarters building, killed one Iraqi police officer. President Bush, meanwhile, has now seen his approval rating dip to its lowest level since he took office. A CNN USA Today Gallup poll shows his rating has slipped to 50%, down from 71% in March. Correspondent Lisa Romanella, meanwhile, took her own informal poll of New Yorkers, and the reviews were mixed.
Bush supporters say the economy is turning around, and this man calls the war in Iraq a necessary evil.
There's some things you have to do in life that you don't necessarily want to do.
But this businesswoman is not impressed.
I don't like his policies. I am not pleased with how world politics are going.
And Etzer, a Haitian native, says Bush is spending too much money while U.S. soldiers continue to die in the Gulf.
I am here since 25 years. All the other president was better than this guy.
Lisa Romanello, New York.
That newest poll also shows Mr. Bush is running slightly behind some of his Democratic challengers, led by retired General Wesley Clark. And Saudi state television now says at least one Saudi policeman and three suspected militants were killed today in a shootout at a hospital compound in the southern part of that kingdom. The report quotes a Saudi Interior Ministry statement, which also says two of these suspected militants surrendered. Four other policemen were reportedly slightly wounded in the exchange. A Saudi official says one of the men taken into custody is a Saudi national wanted for questioning.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all...
feeling. Oh, 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 feeling.
Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is expected to rule today on postponing the California gubernatorial recall election. Last week, a three-judge panel of the court ruled to delay the vote based on claims by civil liberties groups about the unreliability of punch card voting systems still in use in some areas of California. 11 judges of the court heard arguments on the issue yesterday. And even with power crews working around the clock, about a million homes and businesses on the eastern seaboard are still without electricity after Hurricane Isabel. New thunderstorms hit parts of Virginia and Maryland last night, knocking out power to thousands of recently restored customers.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Attorney General John Ashcroft was in Pittsburgh yesterday, still trying to drum up support for the controversial Patriot Act. More from reporter Matt Bush.
The nation's top law enforcement officer says the legislation, which opponents say violates civil rights, is an important tool in the war on terror. Ashcroft added he thinks the country is now freer than it ever has been in its history. ACLU attorney Tom Farrell disagrees.
I don't believe we are. I don't think it is. I think there are too many questions that the government is refusing to answer now.
Opponents of the Patriot Act say it can be abused to spy on law-abiding citizens. Matt Bush, Pittsburgh.
And meanwhile, also in Pennsylvania, prosecutors there are apparently considering criminal charges against some teen athletes allegedly involved in a hazing incident that reportedly involved both physical and sexual abuse. The alleged incident at a training camp in Pennsylvania surrounds a group of high school football players from Long Island, New York. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ask Shirley MacLaine, and she may tell you she was Marie Antoinette or even Zeus in another life. Believe that or not, I'll tell you about some real automotive reincarnations when I come back. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You won't need a seance to see where your old car might have gone. Just drive to your new car dealer, because 12 million vehicles were recycled last year. Thanks to Open Loop Recycling, any scrap of steel liquefied in the process melting furnace can be reformed into any shape. That means fenders of old Crown Vicks or Caprices might reincarnate as hoods of brand new Mercedes. And like the mythological Phoenix, steel conquers its trial by fire and is actually strengthened in the recycling process. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, and believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, also on the Sirius Satellite Radio System, on terrestrial radio stations all across America, and live on the Internet as well, on IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, RadioPower.org, and with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find all of that stuff off our home website at TomHartman.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com. We'll get you there. To paraphrase Shep in our chat room, and you can get to the chat room, by the way, by going to Liberal Talk Radio or TomHartman.com and just clicking on the button. Shep says, Well, all right, I shall paraphrase. Our fearful leader outdid himself today. Mr. Deer in the Headlamps, Bush actually did not look like a deer in the headlamps in this speech. He did the other day when he was asking for $87 billion to the American people. But the speech before the UN, he had an audience, and I thought he handled himself quite well in the technical regard. He didn't smirk very much. He knitted his brow at the appropriate moments. But it was quite remarkable. You could hear in the background the moments when people were kind of murmuring to each other, or there was just a collective intake of breath, the times when he said things that simply defied logic at the United Nations. That the United States went to war. We didn't go to war with Iraq. We had destroyed their air force. We had starved their country for 10 years. We sent the United Nations in to make sure that they didn't have any weapons they could use against us, and then we invaded. You know, it amazes me how effective the Republican spin has been about Democrats don't know how to fight wars. If this is the idea of a war, I mean, it was Democrats who fought World War II, and it was Democrats who fought World War I. Have people forgotten that Harry Truman was a Democrat, that Franklin Roosevelt was a... Anyway, Bush gave his speech and told the United Nations that the United States defied the United Nations and unilaterally attack Iraq. This was right after Kofi Annan gave his speech, saying that this doctrine of unilateral, you know, first attack because you're paranoid, this doctrine was a threat to peace in the world. Bush says that we invaded Iraq to save the credibility of the United Nations. It was truly a George Orwell moment. Among others. I mean, there were several in there. And then he wanders off into these other topics. This was amazing. And at the same time, we have Ahmed Chalabi, who now is in the United States. He's going to lobby the Senate for control of Iraq's cash and oil. This is going to be a biggie. I'm going to get into these things in our third hour. I want to postpone them for an hour or two, just kind of digest this a little bit. I'm also curious to see what Jacques Chirac has to say. He is speaking at this moment, I believe. He was speaking when I came up when I came down here to flip the switch and turn on the program. And I haven't seen a summary of that speech, but interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. I'm sure that the sequence will be Annan comes on, Kofi Annan comes on and says, we have to heal the world. We have to work together as we have since the end of World War II to prevent humankind from rendering itself extinct. Now, it was a brilliant speech that Kofi Annan gave. Absolutely brilliant speech. He started out in French and then switched to English. Absolutely a brilliant speech. I'm sure it will get very little play in the United States compared to its merits. And it was a conciliatory healing speech. He questioned this neocon strategy of preemptive war, which the only nation in the 20th century to precede the United States in saying that they had the right to attack another nation because they said, in defiance of the international community, that that nation represented a threat to them. The last nation to do that was Adolf Hitler's Germany. And no, I don't think Bush is a Hitler, and no, I don't think America is Nazi Germany. But that's how bizarre this policy is. So Annan points that out without being, in his diplomatic way. I mean, I have no requirement to be a diplomat here on this program. And then he throws, the olive leaf or olive branch to the United States. He says, but we have to consider that some nations do feel paranoid. Then we've got to figure out what we're going to do about that. He's trying to open the door for discussion. Kofi Annan is a healer. Then comes George Bush. George Bush is not a healer. George Bush is a punisher. Mark Crispin Miller's done a marvelous analysis of this. We should get him on this program one of these days because it's just brilliant. In his book, The Bush Dyslexicon. And he points out that Bush does not gaffe. He does not stumble over his words when he talks about punishment. Punishment is his thing. He is into hurting. Those are evildoers. This is a guy who has a lot of, it's not just anger, it's rage. Remember when he made fun of Carla Faye Tucker being interviewed by Time magazine and they said, well, how did you feel about executing the first woman and to be executed in Texas? And he rubs his hands, he wrings his hands together and hunches up his shoulders and goes, oh, and she said, save me, mister, save me, governor, save me. and he laughs. Bush is the punisher. And he gives a speech about punishment. And about there's only, you're with us or against us. It's black and white. There is no middle ground, he said. And then Jacques Chirac came on, and I came down here to start this radio program. But I'm assuming that Chirac is going to come back to Chirac being a worldly wise diplomat and not someone who is obsessed with punishing others. Who's not a one-trick pony. We'll see what Chirac says. We'll report that in the third hour of this program. In the first hour here, first of all, our quote for the day from Kofi Annan, from today's speech. Excellencies, he said, we have come to a fork in the road. This may be a moment no less decisive than 1945 itself, when the United Nations was founded. Very, very interesting times. Very interesting times. In the first hour, I want to get into the question of, is conservative trade policy setting the U.S. up for an even larger economic disaster than what we're experiencing right now? Most people don't have a clue what a trade deficit means or why we should care. And usually when people try to explain it, everybody falls asleep. I am hopeful that I am confident that we can deal with this issue in a way that everybody gets it, and you realize, you will understand how this the conservative policies of Reagan Bush and Bush Cheney are putting the United States of America at an end of Bill Clinton, by the way. There are conservatives among the Democrats as well as the Republicans. That's why I very intentionally said his conservative trade policy, not his Republican trade policy. The Republicans are the primary proponents of it, but there are many Democrats out there promoting this as well. This is the DLC thing, the Democratic Leadership Council. Is the trade policy of the conservatives setting the United States up for an even larger economic disaster? Next hour, we're going to ask, how did corporations get so much power over our politicians? This is a fascinating story. It's an absolutely fascinating story. And it is the issue of our time. This is the core, the key to why America is behaving the way it is, how George Bush became president, what the future holds for us, and what we can do about it. And in our third hour, I want to go back and revisit the UN speeches today and what's going on in Iraq. Because there are really and truly, this is momentous things happening. There is an earthquake, a political earthquake happening right now in Iraq and in the United States and all around the world as a consequence of Iraq. And it's not the earthquake you think it is. So this will be our program today. In today's Wall Street Journal, to the topic of conservative trade policy, this is a good illustration of the quandary, the challenge, the confusion that the Bush administration is facing. Steel tariffs pose quandary for Bush is the headline of an article by Robert Guy Matthews and Neil King. Turns out that the Bush administration and Congress both commissioned reports, analyses of Bush's increasing of the tariffs on steel. You'll recall a couple of years ago, it was in March of 2001, just in time for the 2002 elections, Bush, the Republicans in Pennsylvania, you know, Arlen Specter and what's his name, the guy who said that the gay, if gays had the ability to have civil unions, it would be the same thing as legalizing bestiality. I'm drawing a blank on his name. It'll come to me. Or somebody in the chat room will tell me. Anyhow, Pennsylvania was, the Republicans in Pennsylvania were in big trouble. And one of the big problems that they had, or probably the biggest problem that they had at that particular moment, was that the steel industry was imploding. Rick Santorum, there you go. Thank you, Strange Love in New Jersey. Rick Santorum, I appreciate that. Santorum and these guys, these Republicans in Pennsylvania, in big trouble because the steel mills were closing down, and the steel mills were closing down because steel consumers in the United States could get cheaper steel from overseas. So Bush goes in and he says, okay, if you want to import steel, we're going to tax it. He put through a tax increase, George Bush, called a tariff on imported steel. And what this did is it leveled the playing field somewhat for the steel manufacturers in Pennsylvania. The results have been very interesting. And it's a great starting point for our discussion of what is conservative trade policy and how might it be destroying the future of the United States. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Henry David Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. ReclaimDemocracy.org is striking at the deepest root of today's problems, runaway corporate power. We focus on proactive structural change to restore citizen authority over corporations and return them to their legitimate role, doing business and nothing more. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Did you see Darrell Issa, the guy who financed the recall, paid people a dollar a name to get signatures? What a quick way for unemployed folks to get some bucks. $2 million of his own money, with some of it contributed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way. Not a great deal. Apparently, as I recall, it's $5,000 to $8,000. But here, Darrell Issa has now said, if he's not in the race,
He thinks people should vote no. Actually, he said if... Well, here's the quote. This is from the Mercury News. Republican Darrell Issa, the Southern California congressman who largely financed the effort to put the recall of Gray Davis on the ballot, is urging people to vote against the recall. If fellow Republicans Arnold Schwarzenegger and State Senator Tom McClintock are still in the race when the election is held. Amazing. So, anyhow, back to his trade policy. This is the thing. And if what the Bush administration, you see, first of all, this administration is absolutely and totally poll-driven. There have been a number of articles about this in the newspaper, and you know how real it is when you see things like there was one, you know, some Republican on Crossfire yesterday or the day before talking about how, you know, what's so refreshing to see in this White House is that they're not poll-driven. No, they are every single issue. Every single issue has two things driving the decision in the Bush White House. Number one, what impact is it going to have politically? Karl Rove has final say on that. And number two, assuming that you can force it down people's throats or they won't notice it or you can get it through and then we can pick up, you know, we can get people to forget about it in the election year coming up, how much money is it going to make us because it is supporting one of our corporate buddies? Well, the corporate buddies in this case turned out also to be the workers of the steel factories, the steel mills in Pennsylvania, and Bush put this tariff in place in March of 2001, a three-year tariff, it's going to expire next year, that allowed the American steel companies to compete with foreign imported steel, and that's the whole point of tariffs. The first tariffs imposed in the United States were back in 1784. We have a long tradition of doing this. And now the question, in fact, here, the Wall Street Journal, President Bush could seek the ultimate advice from his top political advisor, Karl Rove, about whether or not he should maintain this tax on steel, on imported steel, to protect the American domestic steel industry. Well, the question, of course, then is raised. And the studies, by the way, were inconclusive. They showed that immediately after the tariff went into effect, the price on steel went up slightly. Well, yeah, of course. But then, you know, shortly thereafter, the price went back down again, and so it seems like all is well. So the question then is, what is he going to do? Where is he going to take this thing? Where is he going to go from here with this? With these steel tariffs. And, you know, as the Wall Street Journal says, President Bush could seek the ultimate advice from his top political advisor, Karl Rove. Well, what's going on here is something much bigger than just steel and tariffs. What's going on here is that this country is importing more than it exports. We're buying more than we're selling. And when you buy more than you sell, and you're a nation, well, let's say you're a business. We're a small business, and we're making furniture, and we buy a whole bunch of wood, and we don't sell very many chairs. Now we got this great big stash of wood sitting out back, and we got to pay for it. How are we going to pay for it if we're not selling the chairs? This is the problem that the United States is facing right now. We're importing more stuff than we're selling. And the way that we're paying for it is getting weirder and weirder and weirder and more dangerous. I'll give you the details in just a second. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
Oh.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The Newmont Mining Corporation may be sitting on a gold mine, but its workers say they can barely scratch out a living. Last weekend, about 100 gold miners with the International Union of Operating Engineers traveled from their home in northern Nevada to Colorado, where they picketed gold industry executives and shareholders at the Denver Gold Forum. About 1,000 miners have spent the last year working without a contract, and on Friday they began a five-day strike to protest unfair labor practices. The price of gold has soared in the last 2 years, and Newmont Mining's stock price has more than doubled in that time. Despite this, the union says it's being asked to give up seniority rights, overtime rules, medical pension, and other benefits.
Good news for former employees of Enron. A federal bankruptcy judge yesterday ruled they can pursue claims against corporate executives for the $53 million they raided from the company's coffers just weeks before it declared bankruptcy in 2001. A committee of former workers will pursue the cash, which was originally split among some 126 executives.
Buses in the Motor City should keep rolling along smoothly now that drivers for the Detroit Department of Transportation have a new contract. 84% of members of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 26, gave the thumbs up to the four-year deal over the weekend, winning wage increases, a $500 stipend for uniforms, and a $400 cash bonus to sweeten the deal.
Last week, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company announced it would lay off 40% of its workforce. Corporate executives will be spared, and many of them just got hefty raises. Documents filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission this week note that 11 senior RJR executives took stock grants in the company just 1 month before making the layoff announcement, collectively enriching themselves to the tune of more than $5 million.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
People get mad. There's a train coming. You don't need no baggage. You just feed on love. All you need is faith. And the diesel's coming. Don't need no ticket. You just.
What is a trade deficit? Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman, Truth in Broadcasting on the IE America Radio Network. What is a trade deficit? It's when you buy stuff, but you're not generating cash to pay for it. Now, when you if the United States buys a lot of stuff, let's say from China, for example, which is the country with whom we have the largest trade deficit, We have to figure out a way to pay China. Let's just go through it here, the big picture. This, by the way, this trade deficit, sometimes they call it the current account deficit. It's the trade deficit. This is what we're talking about here. Our exports have dropped by about $90 billion. They're down for 30 out of the 50 states. And the biggest problem that we face is not because of an increase or a decrease in trade. It's because of an imbalance in trade. We have had a trade deficit every single year for the last 20 years. There was one year, 1999, where George Bush Sr. did a little accounting trick, and it seemed to go away, but it was just an accounting trick. This really started with the Reagan-Bush administration, hugely.
And it was part of this whole conservative philosophy of what is euphemistically called free trade. Of course, there is no such thing as free trade and never has been. What there is handing over to the corporations, handing over to multinational corporations the right to do anything they damn well please, and who cares about the consequences to individual nation states like the United States of America? We have a trade deficit now that's even bigger than our federal budget deficit. Now, why does this matter? It matters the only way that the American economy is sustaining itself right now is by importing cheap foreign goods. And we can't do that forever. We have to attract $1.5 billion a day. Every day we buy $1.5 billion a day worth of stuff more than we sell. And in order to keep that money cycling, we have to have $1.5 billion come in for that $1.5 billion that goes out. Got it? It's like if you buy something, if we bring something in, we have to send an equal amount of money out somehow. So how are we doing it? The main way that we're doing it is that in foreign investors, we're handing them our paper. Okay, so we buy stuff from China. We give them dollars. We give them our paper. And then they take that paper and they buy part of America. Right now, the main thing that they're buying is debt. Although they've been buying our companies. I mean, you know, the German companies, several of my books are published by Random House, which is owned by Bertelsmann, a German company, one of the largest publisher in the world. The French own one of the largest communications combines. Over and over, you know, all across the Mercedes bought Chrysler. So we have foreign companies. They've got all these U.S. dollars, and the only place that they can really spend them to get their value back for what they gave us, for what they sold us, is here in the United States. They've got to redeem them, and so they can either redeem them for stuff. They buy our companies, or they buy our land, they buy up our country, which they've been doing aggressively since Reagan. Reagan-Bush, I should say. Or they buy our debt. And in this regard, there's a very dangerous dance going on here. George Bush running up this huge national deficit. This huge deficit means that we've got to borrow the money from somebody. So we borrow it from the people, from China, the people that we bought all this stuff from. We buy stuff from China, we give them dollars, they take their dollars and they buy treasury bonds. In other words, they buy our debt. So we get our dollars back, but what do they own now? They own part of the United States of America, or they own some control over the United States of America. They own an obligation. It's not like they bought land. But just like if the bank owns the mortgage on your house, do you really own your house? What happens if the bank decides to call that mortgage? You know, most bank mortgage agreements have notes in them, have clauses in them that say, you know, if the bank gets in trouble or for a whole bunch of different reasons, the bank can just say, hey, that's it, pay up or leave. A Citibank economist called this the unseen hammer hanging over the United States economy. Foreign governments right now own more American debt than does the Federal Reserve Bank. There's two possible outcomes of this. There's two ways that this can play out. Well, three, actually. The first and most unlikely one is that we would go back to the way that we've been doing trade for over 200 years in the United States, impose tariffs on those things that are imported into the United States that directly compete with American industries. If we can make shoes in the United States and they can make shoes in Malaysia, and it costs $10 for the labor on a shoe in America and it costs $1 for the labor on a shoe in Malaysia, you put a $9 tariff on that shoe, So sure, you can import shoes from Malaysia, but by the time they hit our shores, it would cost the same to make them here. So why not make them here? You save the shipping costs. And that's why we had a shoe industry in the United States from 1776 up until Ronald Reagan came along. And then, of course, Bill Clinton really sped it up by signing the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades and NAFTA. And the GATT, of course, led to the creation of the World Trade Organization and lowering barriers to trade. So the first thing that we could do is we could, which this administration is not going to do. See, this is why, this is one of many reasons why the future of America is hanging by a thread on the 2004 elections. And to some extent on who the Democrats nominate. Because there's a good chance whoever they nominate may win. And is that person going to be a free trader? Or are they going to be willing to defend America's vital interests, economic interests? So the first way that we can solve the problem is we can go back and we can put a, we can say, if there's something that can be manufactured in the United States equally well. Now see, obviously you wouldn't put a tariff on carved sandalwood statues from Thailand. We don't grow sandalwood here and we don't have a domestic carving industry. To use an extreme but obvious example, so you get the point. But if they want to make steel and they want to do it with $2 an hour labor and we're doing it with $20 an hour labor, let's level the playing field. Now, people say, well, wait a minute. If you do that, then the cost of everything at Kmart and Walmart is going to go up. Right. But isn't that going to be a disaster? Isn't that going to... I can't afford things at Walmart if the price goes up. Well, here's how it would work. We would go back to the way it was in the United States from the 1940s through the 1970s. The greatest period of prosperity for the middle class in the history of the United States. And the way it is today in many European nations who use tariffs wisely like this, we would go back to a situation where, yes, your stuff at Walmart might cost a little more. For example, Ben and Jerry put together a T-shirt making company out in Los Angeles. And they looked into the cost of making a T-shirt, and they found that if a T-shirt is made overseas, it costs a few pennies for the labor. But if it's made in Los Angeles by unionized workers earning a fair wage, not just a minimum wage, but a fair wage with real benefits, vacations, health insurance, it costs somewhere between 10 cents on the low end and 25 cents on the high end per T-shirt. This is for a $10 retail T-shirt. So the cost of your T-shirt at Walmart will go from $10 to $10.25. Yes, the price will go up. But now you've got 100 people who have jobs, and they're good-paying jobs. And they can afford not only to buy that T-shirt for the extra 25 cents, but a few other things as well. So you've got to understand that the whole conservative economic philosophy is a race to the bottom for labor and a race to the top for transnational corporations and those they control. And that's it. It really boils down to that. Cheap labor and more money for those who make their living sitting on their butts getting dividend checks from corporations at a lower tax rate thanks to this latest Bush tax jerry-rigging, this tax scheme. So anyhow, the first way that we could solve the problem is by fixing the problem. Is by walking away. We, you know, one of the wonderful things that George Bush taught us is that we don't need no stinking treaties. We walked away from ABM treaty. Even though we'd signed it, we walked away from Kyoto. We walked away from treaty after treaty. We can walk away from GATT and from NAFTA. You know that crazy old coot, Ross Perot, he was talking about, we're going for that giant sucking sound from the South. It done sucked us dry. It has inhaled our way. We are in debt to the rest of the world up to our eyeballs. Okay, so that's the first way we can solve the problem. The two other ways this problem will get solved, and it has historically over and over and over again in nations in the past that have gotten themselves into the same situation that we're in right now, through the same insane conservative economic policies, in many cases. Some have had to do with wars and disasters and things, but usually doing this kind of thing. The other two things are that you devalue your currency. You reduce the value of your currency so that you can pay back, because everything is denominated in dollars. So you say, okay, a dollar's worth less. So now we can pay back that debt, and it won't cost us as much. It won't hurt us as badly. And this is something John Snow, I mean, this administration actually tried this. They flirted with this. Remember, was it O'Neill when O'Neill was still Treasury Secretary, or was it right after Snow started? Went over to Europe and said, we're not really all that committed to supporting the U.S. dollar. And I remember the last time I was in Germany, the dollar and the euro were at about parity. $1 bought about 1 euro. Right now, it takes $1.30 some odd cents, as I recall, to buy a euro. Might be $1.20 in that neighborhood. But it's more than a buck, which means the value. So they've already begun this. Collapsing our currency, which makes our exports cheaper and our imports more expensive, and sort of levels the playing field, but it does it in a way that can be extremely destructive. It's very corrosive. It essentially says, what it does is it impoverishes us. It makes everything in the United States worth less. And everything in the rest of the world worth more. And so it fixes this balance of trade because, you know, if our stuff is worth less, then we can sell it for less. And if everybody else's stuff is worth more, then it becomes more expensive when it comes in. So it has the effect of tariffs in that it raises the price of imports and reduces the demand for them. But in the process, it makes America cheaper, not just our exports, but everything, our land, our natural resources, the labor of our people, makes it cheaper for those in the rest of the world, makes it easier for the rest of the world to come in and buy us off at fire sale prices. You will recall the Reagan-Bush administration tried this as well. And Clinton pulled back from it. And the third way that the problem can be solved is by a global deflation, also known as a Great Depression. These are the choices that we're facing as a result of the conservative trade policy. Is the conservative trade policy setting the United States up for an even larger economic disaster than we're seeing right now? I believe so. A few years ago, the Institute for International Economics published a study saying that when a trade deficit exceeded 4% of gross domestic product, it was impossible to finance it. If we buy stuff from other countries and can't pay them to a level equal to more than 4% of our total economic activity throughout the year, there's no way that we'll ever be able to pay it back, and we're either going to have to decrease the value of our currency, declare bankruptcy and go into a Great Depression, or stop it with tariffs. Our current trade deficit is 5% of GDP. In other words, we've exceeded that. In the past 10 years, our GDP has grown by 64%, and our foreign debt has grown by 257%. Our debt is growing faster than our income. Can you imagine? You know, just think of it as a family. If you were borrowing, if you were spending more money on your credit card than you were making, do you think you'd eventually be in trouble? That's what's happened to the United States under this irresponsible conservative economic trade policy. And eventually, the people who are lending us this money, China, the Arab countries, they're going to say, enough is enough. Now, there's another solution to this thing. And by the way, I think we're starting to see this. Foreign investment in 2000 was $500 billion. Last year, it dropped to $58 billion. They're not investing in the United States anymore. I think they're waiting for our currency to collapse so that our country becomes available at fire sale prices. Asian countries are buying dollars to keep their currencies from rising against the dollar. They've got a lot of very frightened people out there. So what can we do? We can take, one of the things that we can do as a nation is we can take somebody else's wealth and use that to pay off our debt. This is something countries have historically done. It's what the Roman Empire did. It's what the British Empire did. You find a country that has an enormous amount of wealth. It's what the Spanish did with South America in the 1600s. You find a country that has an enormous amount of wealth. You take that wealth and use it to pay off your debts. Like, for example, oil in Iraq. This is Tom Hartman. I'll be right back. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
We needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In a guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
there's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, Peter.
The Mike Malloy.
Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And thus, my friends, we come full circle. Bush, on the one hand, flirting with increasing tariffs on steel because it just makes sense. And it was good politics, and it was essential politics in Pennsylvania if they were going to hold Pennsylvania for the 2002 election. George Bush increasing the tariffs on steel in Pennsylvania so that Rick Santorum and Arlen Specter could keep their seats. And yet he's got this philosophical base, this bunch of corporate yahoos whose only commitment is to transnational corporate power. It is not a commitment to the United States of America, who are saying, no, no, you got to let corporations do whatever they want. You have to call that free trade. You have to sell it regardless of its impact to America and American workers. Yes, we are going to impoverish American workers, and yes, we are going to make trillions of dollars doing it. And you, George, you have to sell this. And poor George is caught in a bind. What can he do? This policy that these corporations are forcing on him, and you'll notice the Bush administration, a lot of people are starting to spell Bush with a dollar sign where the S is. I think it was Pacecop pointed it out on our website today on the chat room. That Bush, you know, if a corporation says jump, the Bush administration says, how high? Whether it has to do with education, health, environment, transportation, communication, we're going to get into this in the next hour. But the point is that how are they going to deal with this? This povertyization, this fleecing of America by these huge multinational corporations. Well, one way is to take, I mean, you think Saudi Arabia is rich. You'll recall during the Reagan-Bush revolution that a lot of the Reaganomics was financed by Saudi Arabia. There was a lot of concern. Remember when the Saudis, they bought Pan Am, they bought this, they bought that. They were buying buildings all over New York City. And there was all this concern about the Saudis are owning America. Well, Iraq, it turns out, may even have more oil, more wealth than Saudi Arabia. And if we can get it, part of our problem may be solved. That's why George Bush did not go to the UN today and say, okay, guys, we'll give you access to, we'll give you guys the oil if you'll help us out. He's not going to do that. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America, Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush today told the United Nations General Assembly, quote, all governments that support terror are complicit in a war against civilization. During his opening remarks earlier, the president said the terrorists have clarified the struggle America and the world are in. Hoping to drive home that point, Mr. Bush went on to note in his words, last month, terrorists brought the war to the United Nations itself.
Those who target relief workers for death have set themselves against all humanity. Those who incite murder and celebrate suicide reveal their contempt for life itself.
Last month's attack at the UN headquarters in Baghdad killed 22 people, including Special Envoy Sergio De Mello. The president said, quote, no government should ignore the threat of terror. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, meanwhile, opened the General Assembly, saying the last 12 months have been very painful. And while he did say the world body has a vision for peace, he said some of its relationships have been strained.
A vision of global solidarity and security expressed in the Millennium Declaration. But recent events have called that consensus in question.
Annan said the international community is committed to a satisfactory outcome in Iraq. He criticized the Bush administration's doctrine of unilateral preventive strikes, and he also called for change at the United Nations by increasing the number of members in the Security Council. Israeli troops today killed a suspected Islamic militant who had apparently tried to infiltrate a Jewish settlement in the Gaza Strip. The militant group Islamic Jihad says the suspect was a member of its group. Today's action came after Israel had rejected a conditional ceasefire that had been proposed by Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. Yesterday, Arafat had told the international envoys he is committed to reaching a total ceasefire with Israel as long as it dispatches a peacekeeping force in order to end the 3 years of continuous fighting. Israel, though, dismissed Arafat's statement as an effort simply to dodge the decision recently by the Israeli security cabinet to exile him.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all... just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The 11-member panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has struck down a ruling to delay the California gubernatorial recall election until March. The election will take place as scheduled on October 7th. Last week, a three-judge panel of the court ruled the election should be delayed based on testimony on the unreliability of punch card voting systems. The 11 judges heard arguments on the issue yesterday and vigorously questioned attorneys for both the state and the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU had claimed the punch card voting system would deprive 40,000 people of their votes, while those opposed to a delay said it would mean invalidating 500,000 absentee ballots already cast.
Hi, Tom Baudette for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudette, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
South Dakota Congressman Bill Janklow spoke publicly for the first time yesterday since being involved in a car crash that killed a Minnesota man. Reporter Brooks Doherty has details.
Janklow said he hasn't decided what his future will be, adding that there are things more important than politics. The first-term Republican returned to work last week after an August traffic accident that left motorcyclist Randy Scott of Hardwick, Minnesota, dead. Authorities say Janklow sped through a stop sign and collided with Scott. The accident happened in southeast South Dakota. Janklow, who is charged with felony manslaughter, refused to discuss the legal case against him. He says he still suffers from bad headaches and some memory loss.
Janklow noted even if he continues working, he's up for re-election next year and his political fate is in the hands of the voters. And a town in Georgia is in shock following a weekend accident that left five children dead when the all-terrain vehicle they were all riding on was hit by an SUV. The kids range in age from 10 to 14. The ATV was designed to seat only a single adult. The children's funerals will take place over the next 2 days. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America, Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. On her way to Oz, Dorothy feared lions and tigers and bears. Oh, no! But they're child's play compared to critters who might homestead in your car. Oh, yes! When I come back, I'll name names. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those, too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You think Noah had it rough managing all those beasts? At least he had an ark, but some of them might hole up in your car. According to Pennzoil survey of 16,000 auto technicians, culprits for some repairs were furry, feathery, or scaly, like chickens trapped in air filters, squirrel nests in the AC, snakes wrapped around brake rotors, and rats storing dog food in exhaust pipes. But wait, don't call the Pied Piper. Have your vehicle checked out regularly by a qualified technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots from coast to coast. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Politicians for sale at low prices. Molly Ivins points out that the top corporations that paid zero taxes from 96 to 98, including AT&T, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, and Philip Morris, paid zero taxes. They gave $150.1 million to political campaigns from 91 to 2001, and public campaign reports that they got back $55 billion in tax breaks. Talk about a return on your investments. How did corporations get this much power in Washington, D.C.? How'd they get any power in Washington, D.C.? What is going on with this situation? It used to be in the United States that it was against the law for politicians to participate in politics. Here's a Wisconsin law. This is Section 4479A, Section 1, Chapter 492, written in 1905. Political contributions by corporations. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree or pay or contribute to contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or anything of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. That's the law in its entirety. The penalty part of the law says any officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than one nor more than 5 years. And if it's a corporation, they shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of the fine, and if a domestic corporation, it may be dissolved. These laws were in place from 1784. That's when Pennsylvania passed the first one. They were in every single state in the United States where it had laws similar to this from the 1700s right up through the late 1900s and early 20th century. The prevailing wisdom was, Corporations don't have the right to vote. What are they doing in politics? One of the conservative websites, in fact, I was going to do it as a conservative alert at some point this week. One of the conservative websites has this whole rant out about those liberals want to stifle religion in America. What they're really complaining about is that if a church, which is a tax-exempt organization, that is to say they get to use land and resources without paying the social cost. Let me explain this. If I have an office building in downtown Burlington, Vermont, it doesn't just sit there in a vacuum. The police protect it. There's a cost to that. If it catches on fire, the fire department shows up. There's a cost to that. There's water lines running to it and septic lines leaving from it. There's a cost to maintaining those. There's electricity coming to it. There's a cost to maintaining the right-of-way for that electricity. People come to that building, that office building, to do business with me. They come on public streets or on buses that are paid for by we the people. The streets, there's a cost to that. So there's all these costs that we collectively, we the people, we the commons, this is part of the commons, that we the people who control the commons, we pay these costs. And so if somebody wants to get out of paying those costs, and the way that we collect the money to pay for those costs is through property taxes. Say, fine, you want to have a business in town? No problem. Pay the property tax, and we'll be able to pay the salaries of the police and the fire department and the guys who maintain the streets and the cost of the hardware and the equipment and the road paving things and the gravel and the asphalt. And yeah, we can pay for all that. Here's your property tax bill. It's a fair trade. We'll even provide you with an educated workforce through public education. It's all paid for by your property taxes in most places. And most people say, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, this is the way they've been doing it for a long, long time. And so this one group comes along and says, but we're special. We're very special. You see, we talk to God. And therefore, because there's this thing called separation between church and state, you shouldn't tax us because we're the church and you're the state. And somehow along the way, some legislators said, okay. And here's the rationale, actually. The rationale is that churches encourage public morality and churches provide public services. In the early years of America, many of what we would call today's welfare services were provided by community churches, local community churches. And so we said, they're a public benefit. And because they're a public benefit, because they're doing something substantial, they're feeding the poor, they're feeding the hungry, they're clothing the poor, they're providing housing for people, they're out there in the community working and doing good works and doing things that are helpful. Because of that, we're going to cut them some slack. We'll consider them part of the commons, and they don't have to pay their property taxes. So these conservatives on this conservative alert website are running this campaign where they're all freaked out because we the people got together and said, you know, if y'all aren't going to have to pay taxes, then you're going to have to stick with doing the serving the public good stuff. And you can't do other things. You can't run a steel mill. You can't open a retail store and compete with Walmart. And you can't lobby our politicians or run people for political office or advocate for political office. You can't inject yourself into politics. You're not a lobbying organization. You're not a retail organization. You're not a manufacturer. You're a church. And they're all bent out of shape about this. But the point is that and they're saying, no, no, we should have the right to involve ourselves in politics and not pay taxes. Now, the corporations, at least, are coming along saying, we're paying taxes, we should be able to involve ourselves in politics. But neither the churches nor the corporations can vote. They're both artificial entities. They are both creatures of law. They don't exist except in the abstract. They owe their existence to a piece of paper signed by an officer of the state saying, we authorize the creation of this legal entity called a corporation or called a church or called a union. Same is true of the unions, by the way. The same is true of the guilds. The same is true of social organizations. We authorize. The same is even true of governments. We authorize it. But they can't involve themselves in politics. Do you know it's illegal for government agencies to involve themselves in politics, even when they're run by politicians? They can't do it. Politicians can be political, but they can't use government employees for it. It's a crime. Churches can't involve themselves in politics. They're tax-free. They lose their tax-exempt status. It's not that they would go to jail for it. It's that they would have to start paying taxes. And that's what they're screaming about when they say, oh, they're trying to limit our freedom of speech and our ability to... No, no. We're saying, if you want to be a lobbying organization, pay your taxes like the other lobbyists in Washington, D.C. do. But the point is that none of these groups... See, the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., this is a very new thing. It used to be called bribery and influencing. It used to be against the law. And so, you know, what happened? How did it come about that corporations could get this much power? I mean, look at the Bush administration. This is incredible. When you look at the decisions being made by the Bush administration, arguably one of, if not the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States, if you define corruption as an administration that does things to serve narrow and limited public interest groups that it supports that support it in defiance of the public good. The Bush administration is the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. Look at every one of their decisions. Look at all of their behaviors. Education, No Child Left Behind. You know what the No Child Left Behind bill was all about? Jim Jeffords shared an analysis of this done for me by a congressional investigative agency, a nonpartisan one. This was back when he was a Republican. I was writing a book called Tom Hartman's Complete Guide to ADHD. I've got a whole summary of it in there. And Jim Jeff and what they found was that the core of the No Child Left Behind bill was requiring schools to buy tests from big corporations that donate money to politicians. It was all done in the guise of standards. Standardization. Well, if they really wanted standards, they could have let schools come up with their own tests. They've got copy machines. They've got a Xerox machine in the back room. They can make tests. But no. Sorry. They have to buy these tests from these corporations, and the tests cost $20, $30, $50 a student. Before No Child Left Behind, all the schools in America were paying in total around $400 million a year for tests. Most of them were tests that were required by colleges, like SAT tests, that people wanted to be taking. In the first year after No Child Left Behind, the testing corporation's revenue went from $400 million to $1.2 billion. It tripled. And it's going up from there. And the result of this is that it's bankrupting school districts. And originally, the administration said, you have to buy these tests from these corporations, and by the way, we'll give you the money. And now Bush is saying, we're not going to give you the money anymore. And this is why you're seeing your schools melting down. Crony capitalism. That's education. You see the same thing right across the board. How did corporations get all this power, and what can we do about it? What's the history of corporate power in America? When was the first revolt against corporate power in America? You're going to be fascinated by this. I'll tell you about it right after this break. Stay tuned. Tom Hartman on the IE America Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
We
needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Once again, we're offered a sterling example of the incredible ingenuity of big American corporations. Outfits that never cease to amaze with their clever ability to stiff their own employees. Their latest ingenious gimmick is an obscure provision in our nation's immigration laws. It's called the L-1 visa, and apparently the L stands for loophole. It's certainly a big one, allowing such corporations as Cigna, General Electric, and Merrill Lynch to import low-wage technology workers from India to replace their American employees. The L-1 visa was meant to allow U.S. corporations to transfer a few of their own foreign employees from an overseas branch into company offices here. But now, these corporations are driving an immigration truck right through this L-1 loophole, having already used it to bring some 325,000 computer engineers, programmers, and other high-tech employees from abroad, mostly from India. Here's how the game is played. The foreign workers are hired wholesale by Indian-based recruitment firms that then ship them to their U.S. branches, claiming that they are L-1 transfers. Once here, these workers are contracted to American corporations. The gimmick is that, technically, the immigrants are still employed by the Indian firms. But the bottom line is that major U.S. corporations have been able to smuggle in foreign workers and pay them a third to a half less than the Americans they replace. The L-1 visa does not require that imported tech workers be paid the prevailing wage, nor is there a limit on how many can be brought in. Not only does this loophole allow Americans to be displaced, but it's also common for the corporations to require their American employees to train the foreign workers who will be given their jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop this wage-busting ripoff, call Representative John Micah, 202-225-4035.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, and welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. How did corporations get so much power over our politicians? How did it happen? When did it start? How have we fought it back? And what can we do now to take back America from the transnational corporations? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937 if you'd like to comment or you have a question. Jim driving through Ann Arbor, Michigan's on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
How are you this afternoon, sir?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Jim?
Very good. One thing, we're a little bit off the subject.
That's okay.
Everything that the Bushes seem to touch, they ruin. You know, Neil Bush was involved in Silverado and bankrupted that in an illegal way.
Yeah, but he made millions.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, Ann Richards had a surplus in Texas until George took over, and then they bankrupted that state.
Yeah, but George and his friends made millions.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and then Jeb Bush, same thing happened in Florida. They had a surplus till he got in power, and now they're running in the red.
Yeah, and but now, Jeb and his buddies made millions, Jim.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and then you got George and the dictatorship he's running in this country, and again, they're bankrupted. So everywhere they go, they rob and pillage and steal the people's money, and we end up paying for it again. And another thing you mentioned a moment ago about...
Hey, Jim, if I could just correct you. We are sure. Not paying for it. Our children are going to pay for it.
Well,
they're putting it on a credit card, and it's not coming... And these 20-year T-bills are not going to come due for 20 years, and I doubt that I'm going to be earning a living 20 years from now, but my children will be.
That's very true. I stand corrected on that. That's right. And, you know, and you mentioned earlier about the education software that the Leave No Child Behind testing is going to require. You know, that's owned by one of the companies is owned by Neil Bush. And
yeah, I know.
I'll let you comment. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Well, you're just making my point, Jim. I talked about how every decision that this Bush administration makes, I mean, this is the key of their corruption, is based on either, number one, it's going to help the polls, because they're doing polling daily in the White House on all these different issues. Karl Rove is running a team of pollers. And two, is it going to help their corporate cronies who are kicking back money to the campaign so that they can raise $200 million so that they can carpet bomb America with advertising and win again in 2004? Look at health care. You know, they want big corporations making your decisions about health care. Look at the environment. They would rather have the oil companies and the power companies make a profit and a substantial profit. We're not talking about just like, you know, in the old days when you had regulated industries and they could predictably turn 3 or 4 or 5% a year. Now we're talking 60, 80, 100, in some cases 200 and 300% annual profits. Look at the explosion of Enron from nothing to the largest corporation in America for a little while, at least in terms of stock valuation, on the back of the environment. Reducing environmental regulations with this so-called Clear Skies Act. Transportation. Communications. This thing we see right now with the FCC. On and on it goes. Pick a sector. Pick a part of the commons. And you can see how the Bush administration is sucking the marrow out of what we the people have collectively built and owned for 227 years in the United States of America and handing it over to their corporate buddies. Now, what's the history of this? When did this first begin? And we were talking about tariffs in the last hour. How does it come about back to tariffs? Well, back in 1773, there was a tariff, a tax on the import of tea into the United States. It was collected here in the United States. It was paid back to England, actually, although a fair amount of it was used here in the colonies. And what that did was it made it possible, because that tariff was on the tea coming from the East India Company, which was the biggest corporation in England, it made it possible for American entrepreneurs to kind of, you know, compete with the East India Company. They could get around them by buying tea from the Dutch companies or even bringing their own in without paying those tariffs and or by paying lower tariffs. And the British government had an idea. Actually, the East India Company had an idea. I'll tell you about that right after the break. This is a fascinating story. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We will be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
the human impact on the environment is increasing the potential for outbreaks of new diseases. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife around the world are being exposed to disease-causing bacteria, viruses, and other pathogens like never before. Global travel, international trade, and loss of habitat are shaking up the world's wildlife, domestic animals, and people. This biological shuffling puts us all at greater risk of new infectious diseases. That's according to Tony Goldberg. Goldberg is an epidemiologist at the University of Illinois. He says human changes to the environment lurk behind many of the diseases that are in the headlines today.
West Nile virus, for example, SARS virus. Recently, monkeypox virus was found in some prairie dogs and a Gambian giant rat in the upper Midwest and actually infected some people, too. These are all examples of viruses that seem to be emerging because people are altering their environment.
Goldberg and other scientists call these emerging infectious diseases. Other examples include mad cow disease, Ebola, and the AIDS virus. Goldberg says pathogens have new opportunities to spread when land use is altered, people migrate in large numbers, or the climate changes. He says one way to slow down this onslaught is to make a point of protecting natural habitats.
If we ensure that whole ecosystems remain healthy, and that there's a minimum of disruption to the natural processes that govern these ecosystems, we can expect to see fewer of these sorts of emergent disease problems.
Goldberg says something as simple as buying an exotic pet is still an environmental change, and it's one that can carry a risk of spreading new types of infection. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world into one big Texas.
Yeah, turning the world into one big Texas. What a grim picture. In 1834... George Robert Twelvetree Hughes, the only survivor of the Boston Tea Party to ever write a memoir about it, because these guys swore an oath of silence for 50 years. In 1834, George Robert Twelvetree Hughes wrote a little book called A Retrospect of the Boston Tea Party with a Memoir of George R.T. Hughes, a Survivor of the Little Band of Patriots Who Drowned the Tea in Boston Harbor in 1773. That's the actual title. And when I was writing Unequal Protection, I actually found a copy of this book. It was published in 1834 and quickly went out of print, and bought it from an antiquarian bookseller. And it is amazing. I quote from George Hughes, who was there. He's talking about how the tea was building up in the coffers of the East India Company. Meanwhile, an immense quantity of tea was accumulated at the warehouses of the East India Company in England. This company petitioned the king to suppress the duty of 3 pence per pound upon its introduction into America. In other words, the East India Tea Company was saying, give us a tax break. We want free trade with North America. You got this? Does this sound familiar?
Free trade is a euphemism for corporate rule. So here, the result was the Tea Act of 1773, which many people learned in high school was, you know, taxation without representation, right? This led to the Boston Tea Party, which was the beginning of the American Revolution. And many people think that England raised the tax on tea and the British colonists got upset. No. England reduced the tariff and went into a free trade policy. The East India Company, however, says Hughes, I'm quoting from this 1834 book, received permission to transport tea free of all duty from Great Britain to America, which allowed it to wipe out its small competitors and take over the tea business in America. You get it? The company was going to pull a Walmart. Hence, Hughes said, it was no longer the small vessels of private merchants who went to vend tea for their own account in the ports of the colonies, but on the contrary, ships of an enormous burthen that transported immense quantities of this commodity, which by the aid of the public authority might, as they supposed, easily be landed and amassed in suitable magazines. Accordingly, the company set out its agents in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, 600 chests of tea and a proportionate amount to Charleston and other maritime districts. The colonies were now arrived at the decisive moment when they must cast the die and decide their course. Rusticus. We still don't know to this day who this man was. He published a pamphlet. The other day I said there are two ways that the American Revolution succeeded. One was committees of correspondence. The other was pamphleteering. Today's committees of correspondence are emails and phone calls to your legislators and writing letters to your letters to the editor of newspapers, contacting news organizations when they have conservatives and moderates on and they don't have a liberal on to comment about the news. And pamphleteering is the Internet. And forwarding emails that you get from people. And, you know, spread the word. So anyhow, here's a pamphlet published by Rusticus. It was called The Alarm in 1773. Right after the Tea Act was passed, right after free trade came to America. Free trade was imposed on America by England at the behest of the East India Company that knew that it could increase its corporate profits through free trade. And Rusticus said, and I quote, are we in like manner to be given up to the disposal of the East India Company, who have now the assurance to step forth in the aid of the minister to execute his plan of enslaving America? Their conduct in Asia of this corporation for some years past has given ample proof of how little they regard the laws of nature, the rights, liberties, and lives of men. They have levied war, excited rebellions, dethroned lawful princes, and sacrificed millions for the sake of profits. The revenues of mighty kingdoms have centered in their coffers. And these not be sufficient to glut their avarice. They have, by the most unparalleled barbarities, extortions, and monopolies, stripped the miserable inhabitants of their property and reduced entire nations to indigence and ruin. 1,500,000, it is said, perished by famine in 1 year, not because the earth denied its fruits, but because the East India Company and their servants purchased all the necessities of life and set them at so high a price that the poor could not purchase them. Whew. And so what happened, of course, is history. The Boston Tea Party, you know. And America was founded. This was the first WTO Seattle protest, and America was founded on the notion of we are going to protect our domestic industries. Tench Cox, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, John Adams, George Washington, I mean, right across the board. If you had said free trade to any of these people, they would have fallen down laughing. They would have said, you are an idiot. You don't understand economics. Read Adam Smith. So so the original revolution in America was to overthrow the corporate rule of the Boston, of the East India Corporation, which dominated the economic life of the eastern United States. Well, back then, that was the entire United States. And they knew it when the Constitutional Convention got together. They said we've got to constrain corporations. Jefferson argued that there should be an amendment to the United States Constitution banning monopolies in commerce, making it illegal for corporations to own up the stock in other corporations, making the possibility of something like, you know, a giant media combine or a steel company buying another steel, making that all illegal. Everybody understood how destructive this was. What happens is that these corporations get larger and larger and larger until they become kingdoms. And they enslave the people. And the answer? The answer was not communism or socialism. The answer was free enterprise in an entrepreneurial world, with some small amount of regulation by the government so that corporations didn't run amok, so that the big, you know, the big fish eating the little fish didn't reach the point where there was nothing left but big fish. And 220 years of wisdom and experience in this area was flushed down the toilet by the first Reagan-Bush administration, was stamped with a certification of authenticity by the Clinton administration, over the loud objections of Ross Perot and more than half of Americans. It's interesting. More than half of Americans, according to polls, when NAFTA and GATT were signed, were opposed to it. And yet, only two newspapers of the over 100 major newspapers in the United States, only two newspapers ran editorials opposed to NAFTA and GATT. This was the ratification of the corporate takeover of America. And now we have George W., bought and sold in every dimension. I defy you to name me an arena of governance in which government traditionally protects the commons in the interests of we the people, who are our government in theory, where this administration has not put the profits of corporations ahead of the interests of human beings, the survival of human beings. You know, the cells of your body are made up of the air you have breathed, the water you have drank, and the food you have eaten. And nothing more. Every time you take a breath, part of that air becomes part of your body. Every time you drink a glass of water, part of that water, what's in that water, becomes part of your body. And every time you eat something, that food becomes part of your body. And now we have a situation where one out of three Americans will eventually get cancer. One out of three. This is unheard of. And it's because our government has been taken over by corporations who place profits above the well-being of people. Corporations are just fine. It's a good thing to do business in America. I am not a communist or a socialist or an anti-corporatist. What is not a good thing? It's just like it's a good thing for cells in the body to grow fast and grow healthy. But when cells start growing without regulation, when they're not part of a larger system, a larger structure that works in dynamic equilibrium and in balance, but one set of cells just says, ah, to heck with all the rest of it, we're just going to grow as fast as we want. We're even going to consume the resources of the rest of you guys. When that happens in a body, we call it cancer. And the founders of this country and the leaders of this country for the last 200 years knew how to control the potential for cancer inherent in the free enterprise system. And that is to have a mixed system where you have appropriate encouragement and certification, sanctioning business. Businesses can't exist without government anyway. The government prints the currency that the businesses do business with. It provides the legal system that they use to interact with each other. It provides the infrastructure that is necessary, the roads to get people to and from their businesses, the rights of way for power and telephones, the educated workforce and consumers. You know, it provides the police, the fire, I mean, you know, all these things in the commons. So it's entirely appropriate. I mean, government plays a role in business. You can't get away from it. The idea of a free market is just a, this is just a conservative buzzword for corporate rule, for creating corporate kingdoms. So how did these corporations get all this power? Well, it turns out that up until 1886, they didn't have this kind of power. At the time of the Civil War, in fact, there were only about 2,000 corporations created in all of America. When the founders got together and they said, you know, we need to control corporations, Jefferson was saying this, Adams said, well, we don't need to put that in the Constitution. We don't even have the word corporation in the Constitution. We know how dangerous corporations are. We're going to let the states regulate them so that it'll be close to home. People can keep track of what's going on. And that's how it was. And then in 1886, the railroads, actually in the late 1870s, after the Civil War was passed, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed that freed the slaves. And the 14th Amendment says, no person shall be denied equal protection under the law. And the railroads, who were then the Microsofts of the day, they had grown from nothing. In 1834, the first railroad in America was chartered, the Baltimore and Ohio, the B&O. And they went from nothing in 1834 to becoming the most powerful corporations in America by 1870. Helped by the Civil War tremendously. And these railroads didn't like the fact that local communities were controlling their activities. And so they said, hey, the 14th Amendment says no person shall be denied equal protection under the law. You can't discriminate. And so you can't discriminate against us. If one county says that our tax rate is thus and another county says it's that, it's different, that's illegal discrimination. And they kept bringing these arguments before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court kept throwing them out and throwing them out and throwing them out. And finally, in 1886, the history books, the law books will tell you that the Supreme Court ruled that, yep, sure enough, corporations have access to the Bill of Rights. In fact, the Supreme Court did not rule that. If you actually read the 1886 case, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, you discover the court ruled no such thing. But the clerk of the court, John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the former president of the Newburgh and New York Railroad, wrote a commentary on the case called a headnote in which he said corporations are persons. Actually, he said that the Chief Justice said that corporations are persons and equal and entitled to equal protection under the law. The Chief Justice, however, in a handwritten note to the clerk that I have a copy of and you can find on the web, on our website at unequalprotection.com, said, no, we didn't say that. We didn't rule on the constitutional issues. But the Chief Justice had died of congestive heart failure before the clerk of the court published his putting these words in the Chief Justice's mouth. And thus, since 1886, corporations have been handed this huge club of human rights, of civil rights, to beat back government. This club that was intended by the founders, that we single, weak, individual humans who are not immortal, cannot acquire wealth forever, can't tear off an arm and create another person instantly like a corporation can do, can't own others of our own kind like a corporation can do, that this club of human rights, of the right of free speech, the right of free assembly, the right of privacy, the right against discrimination, that this club of these rights, club has multiple meanings, this baseball bat of these rights, that we could use this to beat back government should it ever get oppressive. And once corporations got this, being so much more powerful than humans to begin with, they sure enough beat back government to the point now that they have taken it over and their stooges are in control of this administration. You have a CEO as president who has no background in the law. This guy never went to law school. You've got a CEO as vice president. You've got a CEO as secretary of the treasury. This is the coup d'etat. This is the absolute takeover. And we have to do something about this. We absolutely must do something. And see, this is, by the way, this has been one of the big differences between conservative and liberal administrations. Look at this. This is from the conceptualguerrilla.com website. Maybe you don't believe cheap labor conservatives like unemployment, poverty, and cheap labor. Consider these facts. Unemployment was 23% when FDR took office in 1933. It dropped down to 2.5% by the time the next Republican was in the White House in 1953. It climbed back up to 6.5% by the end of the Eisenhower administration, dropped back to 3.5% by the time LBJ left office. It climbed over 5% shortly after Nixon took office and stayed there for 27 years until Clinton brought it down to 4.5% early in his second term. Now it's up to 6.5%, 6.1%. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-DEAL today.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brainshrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes...
Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So Halliburton is charging the Army $85.98 a sheet for plywood that cost $14.06 back in 1997 when they were doing work in the Balkans. You wonder what they're charging for plywood nowadays. I understand it's getting harder and harder to even find plywood. I don't know. I'm guessing that has more to do with the hurricane than with plywood being shipped to Iraq, although I've heard both stories. Anyhow, corporate rule in America, what can we do about it? What I would like to suggest to you, there are people, you know, there's a bunch of activists who are very involved with this. There's all kinds of links off my website, Unequal Protection, or TomHartman.com. Go to Unequal Protection, and it will point you to them. But like the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the Alliance for Democracy, the Green Party is very involved with this, the many progressives around the country. There's a lot, and increasingly, Democrats are getting involved with this, and even a few Republicans are getting involved with this thing of John McCain, for example, in many ways, challenge corporate power and try to turn American democracy back over to we the people. So there's a broad-based movement for this. So I want to, number one, to encourage your elected officials to defy corporate power and say, no, we are going to bring these corporations back under control, and we are not going to put them in the position of President and Vice President of the United States. Again, thank you very much. We would like statesmen or stateswomen, if that's the right word, in those positions. We would like people, you know, hearing Kofi Annan's speech this morning, it's like, you get it. There are some people who really understand what it means to lead. Who really understand what I was so impressed. So anyhow, how do we fix this? We fix it, number one, by raising the issue. Number two, by attacking it. There's a lot of communities around the United States that are passing resolutions saying we think corporate person is wrong. We think it's wrong that corporations should have this kind of power. We think it's wrong that corporations should have the right to lie to people. Free speech rights that Nike was asserting before the Supreme Court in April of this year. We think it's wrong that corporations should have Fourth Amendment rights of privacy like the tobacco companies claimed back in the 1930s. And look carefully at the position of the politicians who are running for office. It's going to be real interesting to see what Wesley Clark, for example, has to say about this issue. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. The 11-member panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has struck down a ruling to delay the October 7th California gubernatorial recall election until March. A clerk for the court says the election will go on.
The Ninth Circuit has just issued an opinion in the Southwest voter registration case versus Kevin Shelley. It's a per curiam opinion, unanimous 11-judge decision affirming the judgment of the district court.
A three-judge panel had decided on a delay due to thousands of unreliable punch card voting machines. An appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court is still possible. Let us move forward. With those words, President Bush asked the international community to play a wider role in transforming Iraq.
Yet every young democracy needs the help of friends. Now the nation of Iraq needs and deserves our aid. And all nations of goodwill should step forward and provide that support.
The president told the UN General Assembly that all nations should join in the fight against terrorism as well. However, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan indirectly criticized the Bush administration doctrine of preemptive action, and French President Jacques Chirac says the U.S.-led war against Iraq shook the multilateral system of the United Nations and put the UN in a grave crisis. Isabel may be long gone, but hard rain has been pounding Virginia again today. Kathy Culpepper in Norfolk says the power is out once again.
To add insult to injury, in addition to a lot of folks having their homes destroyed or badly damaged by Hurricane Isabel, today a hard driving rain is falling in the Hampton Roads area and parts of North Carolina. This is causing more problems because trees are dropping again, falling over on power lines that have just been restored by the power company. So folks who have been out power for days and now back in the dark due to trees falling from this new rainfall. However, Dominion Virginia Power is promising to get people restored as fast as it can, and they are aware of the problem.
Wall Street, the Dow is up 6, the Nasdaq's better by a dozen. More in a moment.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it, because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What should you do? See your doctor, because a simple blood test can detect the problem. And with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
President Bush's approval rating has dropped to its lowest point since he took office. A new CNN USA Today Gallup poll released today shows his approval rating slipping to 50%. Retired General Wesley Clark, who recently entered the race for the Democratic nomination, has higher numbers than Bush in a hypothetical one-on-one election. A teenage gunman is clinging to life after he was shot several times during a confrontation with police at a Washington State high school yesterday. Police say the boy was armed with a semi-automatic weapon, barricaded himself in a classroom, and fired one shot into a wall. More after this.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
A business fare sale launched by Delta Airlines yesterday was quickly matched by just about every other major airline, but that doesn't mean the sale fares are your best bet.
In many markets, or in some markets, there are cheaper fares already in effect. I checked a lot of different fares out of Twin Cities, and Sun Country in many cases already has a lower fare, or AirTran does, but it is worth checking.
CheapSeats.com's Terry Tripler says this is the first major sale of the year aimed at business travelers. Mick Jagger may be young at heart, but his back is apparently a different story. According to London's Evening Standard, the 60-year-old Rolling Stones frontman has been plagued with back problems during his group's current Licks World Tour and has required the aid of an osteopath to keep him prancing about on stage. The paper reports seeing a pale and tired-looking Jagger making one of his regular visits to his back doctor last week, but one rep blames Mick's busy concert schedule, not his age. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Bayonets ready! Take aim and fire! No, you're not in a World War I time warp. You're changing your glove compartment bulb. When I come back, I'll tell you how to hit the bullseye. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't get up in arms about burned out glove compartment bulbs. You can relight the way in these easy steps. With protected hand, grab your bayonet. Bayonet bulb, that is. This little light is so called because of the protrusion at its base that receives electrical current. Now push in slightly and turn counterclockwise to remove. To install new bulb, line up bayonet with socket slot, ease in, and turn clockwise. Now relax. You've won the battle of the bulb without a single casualty. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, patriots and believers in the American way all across the United States, from coast to coast, border to border. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts on these issues, let's talk about Iraq. Before I get fully into that, though, Pace Cop on our chat room. You can find the chat room by going to liberaltalkradio.com. And in our chat room, he says, speaking in Detroit, Mr. Kerry, see, I'm telling you, pay attention to what these candidates are saying about trade. Because this will tell you whose pocket they're in. Speaking in Detroit, Mr. Kerry said that Dr. Dean and Representative Richard A. Gephardt of Missouri, who have staked out traditional pro-labor positions on trade, were pandering to unions and advocating a retreat from the global economy. Yeah, right. We've been in the middle of the global economy since before this nation was founded. We have just historically done it in a sensible fashion that protects our domestic businesses and doesn't drive us into bankruptcy. But enough of that. Actually, I think these are all completely related. Do you think for a minute, I mean, seriously, think about this. Do you believe for a minute, now that George Bush has come clean and said there's no linkage between Iraq and Saddam Hussein and 9/11? Then why did we go? Do you think for a minute that if the United States didn't have this huge balance of payments deficit, this huge amount of money that we've had to borrow from the rest of the world, that we don't have the wealth to pay back because we are so addicted to cheap stuff from China and oil from the Middle East? See, a big chunk of our balance of trade deficit is not just coming from buying stuff for Walmart. It's coming from buying oil from Saudi Arabia, among others. Do you really think that if Jimmy Carter's plan to build an energy-independent United States had been successful, and the average car today got the kind of gas mileage that my car sitting out in my driveway right now gets, 50 miles to the gallon, this thing, a five-passenger Toyota Prius. The average car got 50 miles to the gallon, or even better, we used to have a Honda Insight. I had to trade it in because it was killing my back, because it's like one of these little kind of sports cars, and I'm becoming an old fart. But it's a wonderful car, and if you're 70 miles to the gallon. We drove that thing from Vermont to Michigan, 71 miles per gallon. It averaged. Through the mountains, I mean, this is, you know, 70 miles an hour, 70 miles per gallon. If the average car in America was getting the kind of gas mileage that these cars, which are, and this is not rocket science. These things have been on the market for a decade in Japan. They've been on the market in the United States for several years. If the average car was getting that kind of gas mileage, if we were developing alternative energy sources, if we had decentralized our power production and distribution so we weren't losing 15 to 30% of all of the electricity generated just by long line transmissions, which are profitable to the big corporations, these big centralized corporations, but harmful to local citizens, in that it costs more, and plus you're more vulnerable, as you can see with the blackout of the middle of the northeastern United States. Do you really think for a minute that we would have invaded Iraq if we didn't have this addiction to foreign oil and this desperate need to get wealth someplace that we could use to pay off the debt that we have generated with Saudi Arabia and the other oil-producing nations to pay for the oil that we're importing so that Arnold can drive his Hummer? Do you really think we would have done that? Somehow I don't. Jacques Chirac today, in a stinging attack, this from Reuters. Apparently, I didn't see the end of Chirac's speech, but apparently Bush got this, you know, kind of polite applause. Chirac got a sustained ovation. In a stinging attack on unilateral U.S. action in Iraq, French President Jacques Chirac said on Tuesday the war had put the United Nations through one of the most severe crises in its history. And this is not French hyperbole. He said, and I quote, "No one can act alone in the name of all, and no one can accept the anarchy of a society without rules." He went on to say, "The war," meaning the war in Iraq, "launched without the authorization of the Security Council, shook the multilateral system. The United Nations has just been through one of the most grave crises in its history." And the man who put it through that crisis had just shown up and said, "Quack, quack, 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 quack. Let's stop trafficking in sex slaves. Let's feed more, you know. Isn't it wonderful that the UN is vaccinating people? Isn't it wonderful that the UN is feeding people?" No, not the United States doing these things. It was really interesting. I was, you know, listening to this, you get it that he's kind of playing to a domestic audience as well as the international audience. He says, you know, "Millions of Iraqi children will now be vaccinated." As if he's taking credit for it. And all across America, people are going, "Hey, George, yeah, you're doing good." And then, of course, he has to acknowledge it, because given who he's talking to, so in his next paragraph, he says, you know, "thanks to UNICEF. Well, a lot of Americans listening don't realize UNICEF is the United Nations Children's Fund. It's a United Nations agency. He never mentioned the United Nations was responsible for vaccinating those children. And he talks about all these people who are being fed. And it's from UNESCO. And he never says it's the United Nations. This guy is so good at weasel talk. that the kind of talk that causes people who are just sort of paying attention, and I'm not saying that the average American is an idiot. I don't believe that the average American is dumb. But what I know is that the average American is working so hard right now, given this Bush economy, to put food on the table. Or what was it Bush said? To put food on their family. It's working so hard to do that, that they really don't have time for any kind of thoughtful analysis of the news. They don't have time to think these things through. And then on top of that, there's an army of con commentators out there, these so-called conservative commentators, who will tell them what, in their opinion, the news means. You really want to spin something? Tell people you're not spinning it. So Kofi Annan, he says, we have a need for the United Nations Security Council to consider, quote, how it will deal with the possibility that individual states may use force preemptively. In other words, what are we going to do if another country decides to do what the United States just did and what Adolf Hitler did with Poland back in the 1930s? Unilaterally, all by itself, without an international consensus, attack another country when they themselves have not been the victims of an attack by that country. What are we going to do? The United Nations is at a crossroads. This may be a moment no less decisive than 1945 itself, when the United Nations was founded, said Kofi Annan. We have come to a fork in the road. Our quote for the day, by the way. What will the United Nations do? This is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Particularly since George Bush followed the advice of Henry Ford Sr., the elder, never complain, never explain, and added his own, the official slogan of the Bush administration, never apologize, never admit you're wrong, even when you are. They just think they can bluster their way through anything, and the reality is that as governor of Texas and in many other positions, George Bush has been able to bluster his way through things. He's been able to lie his way through things. He's been able to weasel word his way through things very successfully over the years. And he thinks he can continue it forever. Trish says, never let them see your weasel sweat. Yeah. I don't know. He looked a little nervous the other day when he was this in our chat room. You can find the chat rooms. Go to www.tomhartman.com. He looked a little concerned the other day when he gave his speech. Reuters has some initial feedback from Iraqis on the street to George Bush's speech. Hadi Hassan, a laborer in Baghdad, says Bush is afraid for the future of his forces inside Iraq because of the resistance. And in the end, what he wants is to get international troops to protect his friends. Street vendor Ali Hassan says, it's an excuse to stay in Iraq. It will create chaos and will not solve America's predicament. And now the plot really thickens. Wait until you hear what Ahmed Chalabi is up to. Ah, but we have Curtis Ellis on the phone, our senior United Nations correspondent at the UN. Curtis Ellis, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
And I'm so glad to have you here.
Yes. Indeed, I'm up here at the capital of mid-century classic decor, the United Nations, and the reaction. I just got out of a news conference with the French President Chirac, and he is being very coy. He is playing down any differences with the United States. It was almost amusing. The British reporter, asked him, this meeting you just got out of with President Bush, is this the rapprochement? And to that, Chirac responded, rapprochement? I never saw any differences. We've always been very friendly.
Oh, my. Hey, Curtis, we've got a break coming up here, but you can hang on over the break and fill us in. Okay, great. That's amazing. Our senior United Nations correspondent, Curtis Ellis, he's on the phone from the United Nations, has been there throughout the morning listening to the events, just was in on the press conference with Jacques Chirac, has the whole story for us. We'll figure out what's going on, how it's playing out, where it's going to go from here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In a guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You escape the matrix. Truth in Broadcasting, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont. We're talking with our senior United Nations correspondent, director of our foreign affairs desk, Curtis Ellis, who's live at the United Nations and has just attended a news conference with Jacques Chirac. And I presume sat through all these various speeches this morning. Curtis, you were telling us about what Chirac had to say. What's going on there? What's the big story, as it were?
Well, the biggest story is that Kofi Annan came out and blasted the United States policy of preemptive war. He said that this undermines the United Nations Charter, and it could lead to people doing all kinds of crazy things. He didn't use those words, but he said that you know, if applied, we could have people initiating wars unilaterally, the lawless use of force with or without justification. You know, the whole idea of preemptive war, that this terrorism and the possible armed attack with weapons of mass destruction is so terrible that we could launch wars before anybody even attacks us.
And
Kofi Annan doesn't buy this. He's not buying it at all. And he was very outspoken in his address, which came on before George Bush came on.
Yeah, I heard that. I thought it was one of the best speeches I've heard in a decade. I mean, it was brilliant.
Yeah, he was very outspoken. He made that the center point of his address. He's calling on reform. Everybody seems to agree that the Security Council needs to be reformed. They need to get more permanent members up there. Maybe the Brazilians or the Germans or the Indians should now have permanent seats on the Security Council. The other thing is that Chirac and Lula da Silva, the president of Brazil, they both made a point of saying the UN is not discredited, as some people would like us to believe, as some people have been saying, a clear jab at the Bush administration and the neoconservatives, who've been saying that the United Nations is irrelevant, it's just a debating society. Before the run-up to the war, Richard Pearl says Saddam Hussein is going to go down and the UN will go down with him. Well, that clearly hasn't happened, and now Chirac and others are saying United Nations is anything but irrelevant.
Well, how does Chirac reconcile this clear unhappiness on the part of Kofi Annan and the United Nations and community in general, I think, by and large, with the possible exception of the U.K., and our other well-paid allies. Turkey, we're paying almost $1 million per soldier for the 8,000 Turks that have been brought into Iraq in exchange for the $8 billion that we gave Turkey to join the coalition. $1 million a soldier we're paying Turkey.
Oh, my God.
But outside of, you know, the willing coalition, I think, you know, most of the UN looks at this and goes, you know, there is something really wrong here. How does Chirac reconcile his saying to you guys in this news conference? So I've always been very close with George Bush and the Bush administration, and their concern about our unilateralism, our willingness to just attack whoever we want, whether the rest of the world likes it or not.
Well, Chirac is trying to say these are differences between friends. Whatever differences the French have with the Bush administration, these are differences between friends, and there's still a deep-seated friendship. But clearly, the French are trying to portray themselves as and position themselves as the champions of the underdeveloped world and of the broader unilateral approach, the multilateral approach. He spoke for a long time about essentially in defense of multilateralism, that now it's more important than ever to have bodies like the United Nations. And he, too, is saying the United Nations needs to be reformed in order to give it more authority, particularly in the developing world. One of the most interesting things about Bush's speech, when you compare it with the French speech, is what wasn't said.
And fill us in on that after the break, okay?
Absolutely.
Curtis, can you hang on? Okay, we've got the music means the end of the set. We'll be back after this break. Hang on. Curtis Ellis is going to tell us what wasn't said that was the most interesting part of what happened at the UN today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The Newmont Mining Corporation may be sitting on a gold mine, but its workers say they can barely scratch out a living. Last weekend, about 100 gold miners with the International Union of Operating Engineers traveled from their home in northern Nevada to Colorado, where they picketed gold industry executives and shareholders at the Denver Gold Forum. About 1,000 miners have spent the last year working without a contract. And on Friday, they began a five-day strike to protest unfair labor practices. The price of gold has soared in the last 2 years, and Newmont Mining's stock price has more than doubled in that time. Despite this, the union says it's being asked to give up seniority rights, overtime rules, medical pension, and other benefits.
Good news for former employees of Enron. A federal bankruptcy judge yesterday ruled they can pursue claims against corporate executives for the $53 million they raided from the company's coffers just weeks before it declared bankruptcy in 2001. A committee of former workers will pursue the cash, which was originally split among some 126 executives.
Buses in the Motor City should keep rolling along smoothly now that drivers for the Detroit Department of Transportation have a new contract. 84% of members of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 26, gave the thumbs up to the four-year deal over the weekend, winning wage increases, a $500 stipend for uniforms, and a $400 cash bonus to sweeten the deal.
Last week, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company announced it would lay off 40% of its workforce. Corporate executives will be spared, and many of them just got hefty raises. Documents filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission this week note that 11 senior RJR executives took stock grants in the company just 1 month before making the layoff announcement, collectively enriching themselves to the tune of more than $5 million.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking with our senior United Nations correspondent, and Head Director General of our International Affairs Desk, Curtis Ellis at the United Nations. Curtis, in our chat room, the live chat room that we have during the Tom Hartman program, a whole bunch of folks had a whole bunch of questions for you. I'm just going to read them through quickly, and then you can comment on them after you tell us what wasn't said that you thought was the most important thing.
Okay.
Here's a quick snapshot of the questions. How does he view our change, that is you, Curtis, from acting as the UN, as if the UN was irrelevant and now wanting their help? Did any other nation speak out against Bush's policies? Why was Chirac spinning his differences with Bush in the interview? Does Curtis think there will be any movement on the UN help based on Bush's speech? Let's see. Anything specific the Bush administration wants the UN to do? Was there a laundry list? Has Bush given the UN a bill that he wants us to pay back on September 7th? What would cause the UN to give its support to the U.S.? And and there was one question somebody had asked a little earlier. I can't find it, but it was something to the effect of when Bush was offering his spin, as it were, during his speech, you know, essentially justifying his action. How were the delegates reacting? And we didn't see any camera pans. You know, were people talking to each other? Were they looking horrified? Were they bumping each other's elbow, you know, with the elbow and the ribs kind of thing? You know, what was going on?
The general reaction here was that it was a very long and very boring speech. That was really, and people in the assembly hall looked rather bored. If you looked closely at Bush, he was fidgeting his thumbs. He was constantly fidgeting with his thumbs and his fingers. I thought that was very odd. Now, why Chirac is spinning it this way, I think it's just the normal diplomatic reflex as you try to play down differences and play up the common ground. The reporters in the news conference were clearly trying to bait him. They were giving him bait, giving him every chance possible to say something critical of Bush and the speech, and he refused to. He kept pointing up the points of convergence. Let me talk about the differences between the speeches, though. Bush, okay, in his speech, I don't think I have to reiterate, I'm sure you've been talking about it for the last while. He talked about the successes and the progress in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then he went on to talk about the need for the United Nations to take action against the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. He wants to see a new resolution, and he wants to see the nations controlling these sensitive materials within their borders, and he wants to see greater interdiction of suspected weapons on the high seas and trucks and international trafficking in weapons. Then he went on to call for a new UN resolution and action against the sex trade, against the international trafficking in human beings, particularly women and especially children in the
what
sex trade.
What does this
trade
have to do with Iraq?
No, to me, this occupied the same place as AIDS occupied in his last speech to the UN. He comes out with his grand gesture that we're going to do some humanitarian thing and we're going to cure the world of AIDS, even if we're not going to appropriate any money to do it, as we discovered later.
Well, cut back the money. Yeah,
yeah, right.
I mean, this is the compassionate conservative rap, right? It's the, you know, as George Bush said back in 2001, you can fool some of the people all the time, and those are the ones we want to focus on.
Right. It's his update of the Teddy Roosevelt policy. This is talk big and carry no stick, carry right, no money whatsoever. But so this year, it's trafficking in humans. He talked about how in the United States we passed a law against sex tourism and sex against children is illegal, and he wants to see it made illegal everywhere in the world.
It should be, but therefore we should, you know, the UN nations should commit troops to Iraq?
This is right. This is the best thing he can talk about. He was changing subjects, you know, he's saying. Now, on another hand, we have to do this. We have to.
So
there's
he's
another
to make
scourge
like
facing the planet, and this is, we must do something about it as well.
Yeah.
The French, on the other hand, French President Chirac, as well as the Brazilian President Lula da Silva, they talked about the other problems facing the world, things like sustainable development and the inequity in globalization. Chirac was very clear and rather eloquent in his own kind of in his own way, saying that globalization is inevitable, but we must make sure that it's equitable. And the growing income inequality, the growing gap in income between the richest and the poorest, is unsustainable and must be addressed. something must be done about this. De Silva went even further, and he made an almost evangelical speech appealing to people's sense of God and belief in God, saying that the hungriest, the starving people of the world cry out and plead to the wealthiest among us for food.
They're saying, stop the WTO! Stop this free trade nonsense that is just a giveaway of the world's resources to the biggest multinational corporations!
That's right. They both said that the inequalities and the things that are wrong with the WTO must be addressed. The breakdown in talks at Cancun must be solved. Now, the French are in a very interesting position because, you know, they subsidize their small farmers because they believe in keeping the small farm economy alive, as the picturesque French countryside and the Roquefort cheese must be supported and maintained, which is very interesting because that was the major point of contention in these last WTO talks, is how do you keep small farmers on the land rather than having them flood the cities and flood the world. But So whereas the French and a lot of the other delegations talked about the income inequality and some of these very human issues and economic issues, there was not a mention of economy or the possible roots of inequality in Bush's speech. It was all,
you know,
about...
what I noticed, Curtis, is that Bush talks really well about punishment.
Right,
he's
exactly.
He's a fire and brimstone guy. Take names,
exactly.
Kick butt. That's his thing. And he's a one-trick pony. He can beat people up. He can kill people. He can execute people. He can condemn people. He can label people as evil. And you know, but when it comes to working things out, when it comes to working with people, you know, his report card in school, it must have said, doesn't cooperate well with others.
Well, indeed, because this approach to the sex trade, which everybody's against the sex trade, everybody's against kidnapping children and putting them into brothels. What Bush talked about was, we must have sure punishment. We must put these people in prison for 30 years. Not a one word about the economic conditions, the extreme poverty that forces parents to sell their children and forces people into this sex trade. Nothing
yeah, well,
about that.
I mean, that's this vacuous worldview. Curtis, there's some interesting stuff here that I'd like to know if you heard anything about at the UN. An article in the New York Times today talking about how Ahmed Chalabi is in the United States, and this is the front page of today's New York Times.
Right.
And he's seeking sovereign status for the unelected 25-member governing council. And, of course, they want sovereign status because that will then entitle them to gain control of the oil. The oil
that's
can
right.
only
well,
be sold by a sovereign nation.
He wants control over the economic and the security ministries. He wants the money
right.
and the guns. That's what he's
right.
very interested in having control over. Well, this is very
he'll
interesting.
Become,
because,
they'll become the most powerful country in the Middle East if he gets that.
Well, they've got oil. They've got water. They've got it all.
They've got an educated workforce.
Yes, it's very interesting because see the key difference between the French and the United States approach to this is the French want an earlier transfer of sovereignty to this Iraqi governing council, which, as you know, was appointed by the occupation authorities. These are unelected people; they are handpicked, and the French want sovereignty transferred to them, so they'll be calling the shots instead of the occupation authorities calling the shots. Now, that's really not a very popular position, even in the UN. A lot of the delegations I've spoken with, people from the region, are saying this is not right. These people are not elected. This is sort of half sovereignty. We're going to appoint the occupation will appoint people, and they may be Iraqis. Then we're going to give them. Then we're going to give them power over the country. The people of Iraq didn't elect these people, didn't even appoint
them. Yeah, and if these 25 folks who are the governing council say, okay, this country can only be ruled by the iron fist, and we're going to suspend constitutional decision-making, the constitutional convention that's supposed to be called, and we're simply going to install ourselves as the new dictators, and tough luck. What are we going to do, reinvade the country?
Right. Well, we're very close. We're there. So, and it's interesting that in his news conference, Chirac said, we want to see sovereignty for Iraq, and we want to see democracy if possible. And then he caught himself. He said, well, I mean if possible as a figure of speech. Of course we want democracy.
Chirac said that?
Pardon me?
Who said that? Was that Chirac or Bush?
Chirac said that. So it's interesting. Well, it seems that Shalabi is jumping on Chirac's bandwagon, saying, please, please, please give us sovereignty sooner rather than later. I want complete authority. I don't want to have to answer to Paul Bremer or anyone in the United States. And some of the sentiment here at the UN is, well, let's go a little slower here. Let's set up some elections so we can elect the people that we're going to give sovereignty.
But there's a tremendous danger in that. We're talking with Curtis Ellis, our senior UN correspondent at the United Nations, and there's a serious danger to that, Curtis, in that if we were to hold open and fair elections in Iraq right now, the Shiites, constituting a majority of the population, may well elect a new Ayatollah.
That is true. That's something that the French are concerned about. In the interview that Chirac gave to the New York Times correspondent yesterday, he brought that very point up, that the Shiites are not necessarily the tribunes of democracy, and they do constitute a majority in the country. So it could be a big problem. I believe one of the bigger problems here, which nobody is really talking about, it's just being alluded to very, very, very tangentially, is the fact that the reconstruction contracts are now being given out by the coalition. By the occupation authorities. It's not much of a coalition. That's the official name, but I don't like to call it that. There's in a speech to the Security Council a few weeks ago, the French representative said that there must be transparency in economic and financial matters in Iraq, which is diplomatic speak for we want to know where the money is going. So before any of the member states here start putting up a whole lot of money for the reconstruction of Iraq, they're going to want to know that that money isn't getting worked over by the occupation authorities and then given out to firms that are connected politically in Washington.
Yeah. Curtis Ellis, let's get down to the bottom line here. What do you think what was Bush asking for? Was there anything, I heard his speech, and I didn't hear anything explicit, like, you know, when he came before the American people and said, give me $87 billion.
Right.
But, you know, is there a broad understanding about what he's looking for here?
No, it was all generalities, and he did say that the member states have to step forward and provide support to Iraq. I don't think he expects that much, and I think he was trying to play down expectations. It really seemed like another one of those set-piece speeches.
So you think this is a PR stunt?
I'm sorry?
You think this is a PR stunt?
I think so. I don't think they're going to get a lot from the UN. I don't think they're going to get a lot of money, and I don't think they're going to get a lot of troops. And he did not want to make it seem like he was expecting them to give money or troops. And he said they're going to let the UN draft a constitution and oversee elections and train civil servants. I don't think that's the nub of the matter here. The UN does not want to control the troops. Let's get that out of the way right away. Everybody keeps talking about, well, is the UN going to command the troops? The UN does not want to command the troops. But the UN does want to have some say in the reconstruction of this country and the political future of this country. And to me, it looks like money. If there's going to be any big donors coming forward, they're going to want to know how that money is being spent. And let's be frank, the French want to know that they're going to get some contracts out of this. It's not all going to go to Halliburton and Bechtel before anybody puts up a dime.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's how Wolfie sold this war in the first place, was saying that this will be a self-financing war because once we get Iraq's oil, we can pay ourselves back all of our own expenses.
Right.
And we can pay Halliburton and Bechtel billions of dollars to do whatever they do. And, yeah, they, you know, $50 for a sheet of plywood that costs $12, no problem, because we'll have Iraq's oil and we can take that money and pay back ourselves, pay back our own contractors who are so generous with Republican candidates when it comes time to make campaign donations. And it'll just be, you know, everybody will be happy. And the French and the Germans and everybody else, they're saying, wait a minute, you guys, you want some help? We're available, but if you're going to pay yourselves, why don't you pay us too?
I think, that's really what it's coming down to. The request for more help, it was very muted. It was done in a way of step forward. It's all in our interest that we have a stable Iraq. So, hey, guys, come and help us out.
And then in the middle of this, Ahmad Chalabi comes forward and says to he tells this New York Times reporter that he intends to tell the Senate and the United Nations that they could save billions of dollars on Iraq's reconstruction if they allowed Iraqis to do it rather than American contractors. That's got to be sending a shiver down the spine of Halliburton and its ex-CEO Dick Cheney, who's still taking $1 million a year from the corporation.
That's right, and there's a lot of questions here also about the move over the weekend to open up Iraq's economy to foreign investment. They're wondering, is this even legal? Who's making these decisions? There's no government in Iraq to make the decision that we're going to let the banking sector be taken over by Bank of America or Deutsche Bank or whoever. There's no who's making these decisions? Is this even legal?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you know, the invasion in the first place clearly was not legal. There was, it violated international law anyway. You know, and that's what, it's amazing. What's amazing to me, Curtis Ellis, is how many Americans don't, to this moment, don't get it, how outraged the international community is about the fact that the United States attacked a sovereign nation in defiance of the UN. And how Bush runs around trying to say that he did it to increase the legitimacy of the UN. I mean, they must have been just choking. We got about 20 seconds left here, Curtis. Your final thoughts on this thing?
Well, the last kicker to Bush's speech was when he said the UN, the U.S. remains committed to the UN. I'm sure a lot of people were chuckling when they heard that. That was just the last word that this guy will say anything to anyone to look good to the American public. But what he's selling, nobody here is really buying.
Yeah, but he's selling it to the Americans, not to the UN. Curtis Ellis, thank you very much for being on the phone with us from the United Nations. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us, Curtis. This is Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show. Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary. How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect.
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
Okay, you'll remember Resolution 1441. By the way, welcome back to the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Resolution 1441 of the United Nations explicitly said that the Security Council, on behalf of the, I forget the name of the group that Hans Blix was in charge of, the inspectors, let's call them the inspectors, on behalf of the inspectors, had the authority to decide whether or not Iraq was in violation of UN rules. And if they were in violation, then the Security Council could authorize something like an invasion or any other type of punitive measure. Hans Blix came back, said, doesn't look to us like there's anything there. We'd like another few months to look around. Security Council said, cool, we won't make a decision. It was illegal, according to the Security Council, under Resolution 1441, for any nation to invade Iraq until the United Nations had declared them in noncompliance, which never happened. Never happened. And so, therefore, this is why, this morning, Kofi Annan said, and I quote, "We have come to a fork in the road. This may be a moment no less decisive than 1945 itself when the United Nations was founded, because it wasn't Iraq that defied the will of the United Nations. It was the United States." I love my nation. I love my country. I respect my government. I respect the position of the President of the United States. And I am horribly ashamed that my nation defied an explicit resolution of the United Nations and without provocation attacked another sovereign nation and now has its corporate cronies with their hands deep in the pockets of Iraq pulling out all the change they can find. What can we do about this? Where's the hope in this? What we can do is change this administration in 2004. It's time for somebody else to be at the helm here in the United States, in particular in the House and Senate, but also in the presidency. Get involved. Get political. Wake folks up. Straight to the heart of the truth. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today produced by Joe McPherson and Louise Hartman, engineered by Steph Stryker and Shar Jones. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place.
But this ain't exactly real, or it's real.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.